Chapter 4, How Waldorf Teachers Set Learning Goals. Most educators understand the instructional process as having three broad parts: planning, delivery, and assessing. Erasian, 2005, page 53. Our data collection in three parts, teachers' preparations, daily journals, and after-the-block evaluations, mirrors this division. In presenting our findings here, however, we start with the planning process, the setting of goals for particular blocks of instruction, and then, in the next chapter, we combine the process of delivery and assessment. The data that we collected from teachers determine this structure. In the minds of our Waldorf teachers, teaching, delivery, was inseparable from assessment. To elaborate, in our attempt to understand teachers' accounts, that is, in parsing the journal data for goal setting and assessment processes, we saw that our teachers were usually equally and simultaneously attentive to what they expected students to learn, goals, and what learning was actually taking place. This is so for all teachers, or at least conscientious teachers, according to Erasian, 2005, pages 125 to 130. But in many non-Waldorf settings, assessment of what was learned also takes place later. In the cases of our participating teachers, given the experiential nature of most learning goals, especially in the younger grades, teaching and assessing were almost always unitary or interwoven. For example, a teacher would lead a recall discussion with expectations, goals, for alertness, independent thinking, enthusiasm, accuracy of answers, and appropriate grasp of content. At the same time, he was assessing performance in regard to those goals. We documented many instances of instruction by means of tasks and projects wherein teaching and assessing were simultaneous. In standard terminology, assessments during instruction that lead to adjustments intended to improve results are formative assessments, in contrast with those made at the end of a teaching unit, which are summative assessments. As we will show in Chapter 5, our teachers did not use these terms in working with the two uses of assessment. See Good, 2011. Teachers of the higher grades, 5th, 6th, and 7th, did make, later, formal assessments that seemed to fit the definition of summative assessments. But like all assessments by Waldorf class teachers, formal assessments had primarily a pedagogical or educative purpose, that is, aimed at supporting further learning, and were always understood as open-ended rather than final. Learning goals, objectives, and expectations in the Waldorf lexicon. Educators discussing learning goals usually make a distinction between goals, which are broad statements of general outcomes, and objectives, which are observable behaviors demonstrating specific knowledge or proficiencies. A three-part scheme is sometimes used in discussions of objectives in the cognitive domain: global, educational, and instructional. These are linked to planning for the year, the unit, and the lesson, respectively. Erasian, 2005, pages 60 to 67, Anderson and others, 2001, pages 15 to 17. Examples of global objectives would be competence in math, world geography, or some subject area. Of educational objectives, ability to multiply numbers with two digits or to accurately read maps. Of instructional objectives, ability to work 8 out of 10 addition problems correctly or to correctly define 8 out of 10 map symbols. We found some correspondence between the three levels in this scheme: global, educational, and instructional, and the types of academic goals specified by teachers of the higher grades in the case studies, as we will show. These included broad competence, a somewhat narrower goal of development of capabilities, and specific objectives for the acquisition of subject-specific knowledge and skills. Marzano and Kendall's The New Taxonomy of Educational Objectives, 2007, presents a different hierarchy of objectives that notably takes account of students' motivation and perceptions of the value of learning the task at hand. Assessment of students with the aim of increasing motivation is a main feature of Waldorf pedagogy. We discuss the Waldorf approach to setting learning goals in relation to Marzano and Kendall's theory in Chapter 7. In working with our teachers, we purposely used only the general term goals because we wanted to elicit without influencing their concepts and formulations. In their usage, the term goal was inclusive of all levels of specificity, from general outcomes, that children learn to cooperate, to expectations for measurable progress, that students work on writing skills, and to very specific objectives, that children memorize the times tables. An important difference in the Waldorf vocabulary has to do with what non-Waldorf educators understand as domains of learning: cognitive, affective, and psychomotor. Erasian, 2005, pages 62 to 67. Bloom, 1956. Because these terms are widely used today to refer to different kinds of learning goals and learning capabilities, we use them throughout in discussion and interpretation. They are found in the Shared Principles document published by OSNA as a guide to Waldorf standards for applicant and member schools. In that document, OSNA broadly equates cognitive, affective, and psychomotor with thinking, feeling, and willing. These are the terms that are common in Waldorf parlance. The teachers in our study plan their lessons explicitly with the aim of engaging their students' thinking, feeling, and willing abilities. The teachers often referred to certain experiences and participation in activities as primary goals. This aspect of their planning is important for appreciating the difference between Waldorf and non-Waldorf methods. Many non-Waldorf educators consider experiences or activities to be means rather than ends, objectives. A field trip to a nature preserve might be an experience, means, for students to learn certain facts about botany. Our teachers were clear that the experiences were valuable as such, as well as for supporting the acquisition of subject-specific knowledge. To take an example from the discussion below, one of the third grade teachers stated, as a learning goal, that her students understand the concept of unit. In standard terminology, this is learning in the cognitive domain. Waldorf teachers maintain that children in younger grades learn best not through engagement of the intellect, but through activities involving the will and the feelings. Thus, this teacher began by having them use their own bodies as units of measurement, an activity engaging both willing and feeling. She planned several other activities, including writing, drawing, and measuring, but always aiming to actively engage willing and feeling, as well as thinking. As discussed further in Chapter 7, in Waldorf pedagogy, for younger children, movement and feeling engaged are understood as foundational for later cognitive development. In the presentation of the case studies, the reporting of data is always in the past tense. We provide comments about Waldorf practice generally using the present tense. Comments are based on Waldorf literature and researchers' knowledge gained from long professional relationships with Waldorf education. In many cases, the comments provide the rationale or justification in Waldorf pedagogy for what teachers reported doing when they did not themselves do so in their journals. We also use the present tense in brief mentions of relevant scholarly literature. We look more closely at the literature for comparisons and contrasts in Chapter 7. Planning classroom instructions: what to teach, how, and why. Altogether, we collected information about the planning by 9 teachers of 45 different blocks of instruction in main lesson subjects. Most of the blocks were 3 weeks long. A few were 2 or 4 weeks. The Waldorf curriculum is the guide for what subjects are taught in a given grade. All grades have grade-level mathematics as a main lesson subject, usually in 2 and sometimes 3 blocks in the year. Language arts, including reading, writing, creative, technical, or expository appropriate to the subject, spelling, and grammar, were part of every block. During the 5 months of the research, the third grade teachers taught blocks in arithmetic, Old Testament stories, measurement, shelter, houses, and house building, grammar, farming, and gardening. The fourth grade teachers taught blocks in local geography, history, including Native American studies and colonial times, human and animal, zoology, Norse mythology, and fractions. Fifth grade teachers taught blocks in ancient civilizations, Indian, Persian, Egyptian, and Greek, botany, North American geography, mathematics, and freehand geometry. The sixth grade teacher taught geology, Roman history, business math and economics, geometry, and European geography. Seventh grade teachers taught introduction to chemistry, algebra, history, Middle Ages, Renaissance, art of exploration, astronomy, physiology, and physics. We identified six prominent themes or features that characterized teacher block preparations. 1. Goals as benchmarks on a continuum of learning rather than as endpoints. 2. Experiential goals, planning for lively engagement in subject-related activities. 3. Goals specified for subject-related content mastery and skill acquisition. 4. Goals for reinforcement and further development in math and language arts, whatever the subject of the block. 5. Goals for the development of dispositions, capacities, and capabilities in all domains, including social skills. 6. Goals of artistic immersion. These were overlapping rather than discrete features. The first, setting goals as benchmarks in a continuum, applies to all the others. And the third through sixth were usually included with implementation of the second, the experiential goal. Whether a goal was broadly or specifically stated, it was stated as a benchmark in what teachers understood as a continuum of expectations in all areas, cognitive, affective, psychomotor, as well as artistic and social. At first, this seems obvious, for all teaching aims at gradual improvement in proficiencies, step-by-step increases in knowledge reasonable to expect for each age and grade. The difference that we noted for our Waldorf teachers was a matter of emphasis and attitude. Learning is ongoing and is an activity for all of life. The language they used to name goals expressed and affirmed a marked open-endedness in their expectations for achievement, whether of content mastery, skill acquisition, development of higher order thinking capabilities, or social goals. For example, they often use the phrase to further develop in regard to some skill. Other phrases that expressed this open-endedness were that students will enhance awareness of, work with, increase their understanding of, continue exploring, continue to strengthen, continue to sharpen, understand and appreciate. They often expressed a block subject, content knowledge, goals as benchmarks in their understanding of a subject in relation to the year, since the main lesson subjects recur usually two or three times, and also in relation to the full 8-year curriculum. For example, one of Bill's goals for the grammar block that started off the year was that his seventh graders take a greater role in editing and revising their own writing than they had taken up to now. He explained that this was really a year-long goal for independence and self-editing. But the end of 1 year was not an endpoint. The next year would bring new opportunities for meeting goals not attained in the current year. The wording of the grade-by-grade curriculum standards provided to us by the Cheshire Waldorf School illustrated the open-endedness that is basic to the Waldorf understanding of student progress in the early grades. In the third grade, students would be able to improve printing, begin to recognize parts of speech, work with basic punctuation, practice spelling. As the grades progress, we found in these standards fewer such phrasings and greater specificity of levels of competence. All the teachers stated some block goals specifically in relation to individual potential for achievement, as in Laura's list of goals for fourth grade geography, where she wrote, "Students will enhance writing skills by recalling and generating their own text for their books with simple sentences and paragraphs, each at his or own level of progress." Expectations for achievement in specific assignments as well were often tailored to individual learning styles. For example, in Clara's Roman history block, she expected students who she knew were good writers to write an extra composition besides the four that were required. By their nature, social goals were considered open-ended. Healthy attitudes and relationships with peers, and a range of social skills develop gradually over time. Our teachers did not usually state social goals as part of planning. Rather, in describing assessments that they made during, for example, group learning activities, they mentioned their assessments of observed social interactions. Likewise, it was reasonable that when development of individual capacities was the goal, an emphasis on benchmarks rather than endpoints was called for. The counterpart of developmental benchmarks as goals was a concern for age-appropriate, open-ended assessment discussed in Chapter 5. This marked emphasis on open-ended goals showed the influence of the Waldorf Life Goal, for it has expressed the attitude of teachers, which they hoped was conveyed to the students, that there is always more to be achieved, more to be learned about a subject, more opportunities for learning it, that learning will be or should be ongoing and lifelong. 2. Experiential goals. Lively engagement in subject-related activities. In every block that we documented, teachers' planning was guided by the question, what can I plan to support my students' lively engagement in this area of subject learning? They expressed at the outset their concern for awakening interest and for motivating students to want to learn more. Goals that fall within what most educators call the affective domain, involving feelings like wonder, interest, enthusiasm, motivation, attentiveness, enjoyment in interpersonal relationships, and so on. They gave prominence to stimulating those feelings for the sake of the development of the feeling life itself, as well as a basis for motivating interest in the subject. Experiential goals were formulated, for example, as to take a first look at, work with, get the feel for the difference between two cultures, have an experience of the development of, acquire understanding of the plant and its relationship to sun, earth, insects, explore, develop a sense of, heighten awareness of. Statements about getting students to appreciate or to enjoy were very common. As noted above, the Waldorf emphasis on experience as a goal raises the important question, whether experiences are means to learning or ends in themselves. Some educators, for example, Anderson and others, 2001, pages 242 to 245, urged the making of a distinction between activities which are means and instructional objectives, which are the desired ends. The activity itself cannot be the goal, they say, and there is no way to measure learning without specification of what is to be learned from the activity. Likewise, Erasian, 2005, recommends that teachers formulate clear statements of what students will be able to do. It is better, he says, to state as goal that students can explain the importance of something than that they realize its importance, not because the latter is not a worthy goal, but because the former is more easily assessed. Pages 67 to 72. A field trip, for example, should not be considered a goal, but an activity that leads to the learning of something as a result of the field trip. In Waldorf teaching, experiences are considered valuable in themselves, and Waldorf teachers believe they can assess the quality of a student's engagement. The difference between the Waldorf approach and that of Anderson and others, 2001, is the result of the latter's and, we believe, most scholars' focus on cognitive goals. But the Waldorf perspective is not without proponents. From Dewey onwards, educators have acknowledged the value of doing without necessarily having a gain in the kind of knowledge that can be measured. Yet we find that in most classrooms today, cognitive goals or cognitive objectives are privileged over other types of learning. One goal of Mary's fifth grade botany block was that students engage directly in nature. She took them on a nature hike. They knew they were expected to be observant and would later be writing compositions using their impressions. But the engagement in the activity of the hike was, in her view, a worthy goal in itself. She assessed the goal as met in the doing, her block goals including the learning of subject-specific content as well. Claudia wanted her students to be immersed in the stories of the Old Testament. This was her main goal. To achieve this, she planned for them to hear the stories told, draw illustrations, and write out most of the stories as dictations. One of Laura's stated goals for fourth grade math was that students have a sensory experience of unit through engaging in the experiences she arranged and guided. In this instance, a non-Waldorf educator might say that she was conflating the learning goal with the activities intended to lead the learning. That is, her real goal, or better, given its specificity, the objective, was that students understand cognitively the concept of unit, and the sensory-motor activities were activities, or means, aimed at attainment of that goal. In Waldorf pedagogy, the doing is learning, especially in the lower grades, where teachers try to engage children's will. In Waldorf early childhood education, kindergarten through grade 2, a major portion of the day is devoted to movement, gestures, games, not only for fun, although cultivation of enjoyment and learning is itself a goal, but also because in Waldorf pedagogy, these are considered to be the strongest foundation for cognitive learning to follow in the later grades. In geography, Rosa had her fourth graders engage in making a map. The learning of the spatial relationships within the geographical unit being mapped, a cognitive goal, was important, but it was clear from her journal that the doing of the map was the main objective. Lynn's fourth block of the year was devoted to a play based on Genesis. The history topic for third grade is Old Testament stories. Her stated goals in her journal were for students to perform a play on a stage with singing, dialogue, movement, and acting. To work together as a group, learning to carry individual parts while working toward a common goal. To gain appreciation for the practice and preparation needed to produce a refined final result. To gain and increase confidence in speaking, singing, and moving with clarity, strength, and beauty. To increase appreciation for each other's abilities. To succeed as individuals in their roles. It would be a distortion of her intention to construe these not as goals, but as activities leading to instructional cognitive objectives, such as learning of a part, or perhaps demonstrating the knowledge of the content of that part of the Old Testament. To engage her sixth graders in the experience of being geologists, Clara organized an overnight backpacking trip where they had to find their way using their own maps and compasses, collect rock samples, and do some rock climbing supervised by a local professional, along with enjoying camping, carving spoons, and other wilderness activities. The main goal, stated as such, was that students engage actively and attentively in these experiences. Though participating in such experiences, one teacher told us, his students would grow in self-understanding. In summary, it was clear from the way teachers expressed themselves in the journal entries and from how they carried out their plans and assessed achievement that experiential goals were foremost, not learning something, but doing something. Teachers' preparations in all grades aimed at providing diverse and lively experiences to engage the students in different ways, cognitively, practically, socially, physically, aesthetically, effectively, in the material of the subject. These included speech activities, experiments, practical applications, and in almost every block, a field trip. Within this theme of experiential goals, we identified several instructional plans that were common to all 9 cases with age-appropriate variations. Lively preparation, starting the day with movement and music. The teachers in our case studies began the morning with a series of activities that typically included movement, choral speaking, singing, recorder playing, and math exercises, either as games, tossing balls or beanbags, played to the recitation of a times table, or in the older grades, mental math, which was oral quizzing and problems to be worked out in the students' heads. Teachers sometimes replaced the math with spelling or grammar games, and they changed the repertoire of activities every month for 8 years. The poems were seasonal or related to the content of the main lesson. Bringing poetry into the classroom was important for all grades and for several reasons, we were told. In the early grades, the reciting of poetry can awaken love of words, images, and sounds of the language. In later grades, students study poetry as a subject and learn to analyze structure, form, and content. Recitation will also help develop the memory and proper speech. Tongue twisters will help with enunciation. The reciting of beautiful words every morning can have a calming effect on a student who needs routine or an uplifting effect on one who feels glum. It is also helpful for performing on stage. Every class presents a play each year for the rest of the school. Most of the teachers' journals noted the rationale for circle, pointing out the positive impact of lively circle sessions on children's attentiveness and receptivity to the main lesson presentations that followed. They also mentioned, as goals, the social and physical benefits. Lynn noted gains among her third graders in physical strength and coordination. She had them walk a balance beam while holding a felt ball and balancing a beanbag on their heads, and she taught them very challenging brain gym type of limb crossing exercises. But the goal of circle most often mentioned was to increase alertness and the ability to focus, that the students be wide awake. See vignette 1. A considerable amount of research has confirmed the positive impact of physical activity on cognitive skills as demonstrated by test scores briefly reviewed in Reynolds, 2010. Multisensory engagement, liveliness through variation. Teachers always planned activities that would require students to engage in the same material with sensory variations. That is, variously through seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, moving, drawing, problem-solving, speaking, and reciting, as well as reading and writing. Here are some examples from our data. Most of the examples here are activities that served as performance assessments, which we discuss as such in Chapter 5. Vignette 1. Claudia's third grade circle. Claudia guided her third graders through this routine of opening activities during her history block, the first of three for the year on Old Testament stories. It began at 7:55 a.m. and ended about 9:10 a.m. when she began main lesson proper with a recall discussion of the previous day's stories. She greeted and shook hands individually with each child at the door. With a ringing tone as a cue to begin the day, she took attendance. This was itself a musical activity. She called out the name and, "Are you here?" on two musical tones, and each child responded, "I am here," singing the same tones. They recited a short morning verse, and she led them in a speech warm-up, reciting in unison, "Then God said, let there be air, for there was as yet no air in the world. The air angels began to blow and move their powerful wings. The wind fanned the glowing earth fire, and it flickered and flashed. Huge firestorms burst forth," continuing for four more lines. Then they recited a poem by Robert Frost, which was related to the block theme. "Nature's first green is gold, her hardest hue to hold. Her early leaf's a flower, but only so an hour. Then leaf subsides to leaf, so Eden sank to grief. So dawn goes down to day, nothing gold can stay." Next, they practiced playing recorders with warm-up scales and a new song that they were learning. Then came a singing game, "Intery, Mintery, Cuttery Corn," which involved a series of movements while singing, extended heels, slapping thighs, clapping hands, joining hands and circling, forming and ducking under arches. Next, they practiced times tables, this day in a circle, other days in lines or paired with partners, depending on the game, using either balls, beanbags, or rhythm sticks. They ended by reciting a short closing verse. She set up the math games to reinforce proficiency and help students know their times tables by heart with confidence. Her goals for recitations and singing were to provide students with an experience of rhythm, alliteration, syntax, and possibilities for developing aesthetic sensibility. In geology, when topic was salt, Clara had her sixth graders taste seven different kinds of salt. Describing another experiment, she wrote, "They were thrilled to see the lime in the stones bubbling away. They could taste, feel, and see the evidence of the limestone being worn away." Claudia devised multisensory presentations to help her third graders achieve the goal of learning three new cursive letters each day. She had specified three objectives: that they recognize, know how to write, and have an aesthetic experience of letters. She had them prepare a special book, apart from their main lesson books, with lightly colored pathways filled in lines. She drew each new letter in the air and then had them do likewise. She had them describe its shape orally. She had them draw it with their fingers on a partner's back and then very lightly drew several of the letters in a row in their books. After correcting these, they drew them in darkly with colored crayons. Rose's fourth grade math block included beanbag tossing games, relay races, straightforward instruction with blackboard examples, problem sheets, spiral drawings representing number increments, hand-drawn number tables for their main lesson books and quizzes, all as reinforcement for the math skills she expected them to achieve this year. To meet the goal of experiencing the differences among the four kinds of sentences, Claudia had her third graders memorize a poem, The Four Kinds of Sentences. Each verse was composed of only one kind. For example, an imperative sentence commands, listen to the night wind blow, see the swirling flakes of snow, close the window, shut the door, keep out the wild wind's angry roar, light the fire, let it blaze, warm the house with its hot rays, and so on. As she recited this, she had them stomp feet at the periods and jump up at each word with a capital letter. They also acted out parts of the poem and copied it to their main lesson books. On the first day of the chemistry block, Beverly took her seventh graders outside. They collected things to burn, leaves, paper, acorns, lichen, bark, roots, pine cones. She instructed them to observe the burnings carefully. The next day, they were asked to recall which had the brightest flame, which was the smokiest, what remained afterwards, and so on. Later, they wrote up their observations for inclusion in the main lesson books. To begin the block on human and animal, an approach to zoology for young children, Laura had her fourth graders use their bodies to imitate the basic gesture of rocks, curled up and still, plants, vertical and growing, animals, on all fours, horizontal, and humans, standing up straight and tall, in order to engage them in a kind of primal experience of the difference. Claudia's third grade math farming block began with a visit to a local farm, where the children helped harvest some of the ingredients that they would then use in a recipe, practical activity that required them to work with fractions. The teachers always included writing assignments as one variation for learning the material. Most required students to rewrite key assignments more than once before a final careful copying into the main lesson books. Clara had her students copy dictations in geology into a notebook first, so that by the end, they had worked with the same content at least three times, hearing it spoken, writing it down, and rewriting in main lesson books with appropriate revisions. Engaging in the block subject through writing also furthered goals for progress in language arts, discussed separately below. Another variation, intended to help generate a high level of interest, was to have students work in groups or pairs. Along with goals for subject skills and knowledge, teachers stated social goals for group work, like progress in the development of cooperation, sensitivity to others' feelings, respect and open-mindedness toward the opinions of others. We note the prominence of social goals separately below. Working in a group, some teachers noted, increased depth of understanding and provided a shared, and they thought deeper, experience of learning. Creating opportunities for students to work together is especially effective in science, according to Zimmerman and Stage, 2008. They argue the effectiveness of multiple teaching strategies, projects, direct observation of nature, making science personally relevant, and hands-on activities, all strategies reported when our teachers taught science blocks. Bringing content to life with stories and narrations. All the teachers prepared what they intended as lively and engaging presentations of new material orally with a story in the younger grades, or narrative, which became the material for recall and review the next day. Teachers did not have students read textbooks. Based on their experiences in teaching this way, they were certain of and often explicitly reported its benefits. Provided that the teacher's speaking is skillful, we suggest that the spoken word does call forth in listening a greater attentiveness to meaning than would their reading the same material. Oral presentation vivifies the experience. Students engage more personally in the content, which is less abstract than it would be in a book. This is especially so in the lower grades, Stories conveying morality and aspects of human character, according to one of our teachers, could be absorbed by younger children through these allegorical pictures. In the Waldorf view, a child will be more likely to remember the message in a well-told story about an honest fellow than she would from a lecture about honesty, because a story appeals to and activates that child's capacity for imagining. Lynn told a story to begin her math measurement block about people in a village coming to a granary for seed, a terrible snowstorm having left them isolated and without food. They came to the granary with many different kinds and sizes of containers. How is the seed to be distributed fairly? Her aim was to have them, through engaging in the story, understand with their feelings the need for standardized measurement. The need is the grounding and human context for what otherwise might be seen simply as an aspect of mathematics. In this way, also, they would gain an intimation of the moral dimension of measurement. In Chapter 5, we have several other examples of teachers' lively oral instruction, presenting the material while simultaneously attentive to assessing student response. Waldorf classrooms have books available for students to consult, and many blocks, especially in higher grades, require students to do library research. All grades have reading lists for summer and during the school year. The non-use of textbooks, which applies only to instruction of the main content of a block, frees teachers in the direction of creative teaching. Erasian, 2005, notes that, more than any other single resource, the textbook determines instructional plans in many classrooms. A large part of students' learning time and a large part of the teacher's instructional time are focused on textbook use. Page 59. See also Ravitch, 2010, page 237. Enlivening lessons with multi-subject integration. The teachers enliven their teaching by integrating into any given subject block some content, activities, and skills usually considered as belonging to separate subjects. According to Waldorf pedagogy, breaking down the largely artificial boundaries of subject areas is important for getting students to appreciate the interrelatedness or wholeness of human experience. Education scholars also recognize that interdisciplinary learning helps to motivate students to expand their horizons. For example, Hickey and Robeson, 2013. Integrating seemingly disparate topics like poetry, biography, science, and mathematics in the same lesson creates a unified conception and helps students make connections in and between disciplines. Gardner, 1995, 2004. Some teachers planned instruction around a unifying theme for a given year suggested by the Waldorf Comprehensive 8-Year Curriculum. For example, Bill tried to link all subjects, astronomy, physics, chemistry, math, as well as history, to the 7th grade theme of the Age of Exploration. He wanted his students to understand how developments in astronomy and math, for example, made long-distance voyages of discovery possible. Teachers incorporated expectations for progress in language arts and for artistic immersion into every block. We treat those separately below. Every teacher reported that history, science, and geography blocks included biographies of relevant persons. In every block of every grade, teachers included some poetry that touched on the topic of the block. Geography blocks invariably included freehand drawings of colorful maps, copied from models provided by the teacher, with artistic values as well as accuracy goals. The Renaissance history block included developments in art and specific discoveries. Other examples follow. In psychology, Beverly had her 7th graders memorize and recite a poem, Rothke's The Waking, which was to help reinforce the student's understanding of the human being as more than the sum of its physical parts. She used art periods outside of main lesson to draw portraits in order to help them understand human proportions, and linked this as well to their studies this year of Renaissance history and art. In astronomy, Bill had his 7th graders learn two poems about the stars by Byron and Teazle. The reason, he said, was that poetry expresses and evokes the wonder that motivated the early astronomers to explore the heavens. Students need to see that astronomy would not be possible without human interest and enthusiasm. They learn to sing Perfect Light, Haydn, and Long Is Our Winter, Mozart, and several seasonal songs. The astronomy block was during Advent. They also spent time reflecting on Van Gogh's painting, Starry Night. In history, Age of Exploration, Bill integrated math and science content. For example, he had students make detailed drawings of nautical quadrants, one of many scientific developments that enabled explorers to achieve what they did. In astronomy, Beverly's list of possible topics for students' projects included the biographies as well as the discoveries of Galileo, Tycho Brahe, and Kepler. Her narrative presentations in this block touched on history, philosophy, and the history of science. She began the block with a narrative about star watching in ancient cultures, Egypt, Babylonia, China, and later presented Greek theories about the cosmos, the Ptolemaic system, the Dark Ages, and astrology, which she led into discussion about what determines character. The students decided that they themselves and not the stars would decide. In geology, Clara began with the story of the creation, not to inject a religious perspective, but to provide the context and historical perspective for the questions that people have always asked about the origins of the Earth and our universe. She also had students write a composition on the importance of wonder and imagination in the earth sciences, the writing of which would, she expected, call forth those very qualities, as well as serve to advance skills in language arts. Vignette 2. Laura's fourth grade measurement, geography, and Native American culture block. Laura set a broad goal for appreciation of the subject. She also specified acquisition of subject-specific skills, including proficiency in using rulers and compasses, grade-level math competence, map-making, understanding grids and scale, and factual knowledge about local history and geography. She also had clear expectations for progress in spelling, vocabulary, and the writing of sentences and paragraphs. To begin, she focused on getting the children to understand the concept of unit. Without this as a foundation, she said, they would not be able to understand and correctly make measurements, nor would they be able to understand and draw maps as representations of geographical reality. In accord with the pedagogical insight that young children learn best through doing, experience first, then concept, she had them carry out a series of measurements, for example, of their desks, using thumbs, hands, arms, and feet as units. Then, they measured the room itself with paired teams lying on the floor, calling it a John Mary unit. To give them an experience of perimeter, she had them imagine the path of an ant traveling around the room at the base of the wall. On subsequent days, they wrote paragraphs about these exercises for their main lesson books. To teach them the compass and the four directions, she told them a Native American legend about greeting the sun and had them work out, through observation, where and when the sun was brightest in the windows. She then had them stand and face the directions. She had them work in groups to draw maps of the classroom to scale, plotting objects on a grid, which she had explained. They also worked outdoors, again first imagining and then walking the path of an ant around the foundation of the building, and then drawing the building from a bird's eye view with more details like the parking lot and gardens. She reinforced this experiential learning by having them create drawings with colored pencils, picture maps with the natural landmarks, and write dictated compositions that incorporated her expectations for progress in writing, vocabulary, spelling, and grammar. In circle, she had them do ball-tossing games with recitation of the 12s table, important in a measurement. Integral to Laura's fourth grade local geography block was an introduction to the Native Americans who first lived in New England, early colonial history and culture, as well as basic skills to understanding geography, like using a compass and measuring and drawing with rulers. She devoted a full week to scale drawing, which is important for math skills and artwork, as well as geography. See Vignette 2. Variety of sources used in planning. To help ensure rich content and lively presentations, the teachers used a variety of sources. They consulted Waldorf curriculum guides, standard subject textbooks, and other books in their possession, or from local public or school libraries. For circle activities, they learned songs, verses, recorder tunes, games, and exercises in order to teach them to their classes. all reported making use of the Internet. Those who had taken a previous class through the 8 years made new use of materials and activities they had found effective before. All said that they drew at times on the experience of colleagues who had taught that subject in that grade. Several reported taking advantage of the expertise of, and arranging visits by, parents or local experts. Some examples follow. Clara consulted over 20 books from the library in preparing sixth grade geology, as well as several internet sites about volcanoes and other topics. She also used her teaching notes from her 3 previous rounds as a class teacher and advice from colleagues for setting up the logistics for the overnight camping trip. Claudia combined the third grade house building and shelters block with the study of Native American cultures. Her resources were Teaching Practical Activities by Roy Wilkinson, First Houses by Monroe and Williamson, Houses of Bark and Houses of Snow, Skin and Bones by Bonnie Shemi, Illustrated House Building by Graham Blackburn, and House Building for Children by Lester Walker. She also consulted her notes from a summer training course and 4 Waldorf teacher curriculum and teaching guides. To prepare for the 5th grade block on ancient India, Mary consulted several books, including Ancient History, Atlas of World Faiths, Hinduism, Religions Around the World, Indian Mythology and Teaching History, Volume 1. She searched the internet for information on exotic animals, geographical details, and how to wear a sari. She interviewed 2 natives of India, got advice from colleagues, and used notes from a summer training course and her notebooks from teaching this block previously. To enhance the lively engagement of students, some teachers included activities based on their own outside interests, hobbies, talents, or experience from previous careers. For example, Clara's extensive experience in outdoor fitness, hiking, camping, rock climbing, helped shape her class's field trip in the geology block. Mary's folk dancing background enabled her to bring dancing into cultural studies blocks. An accomplished guitarist, Carl was able to accompany his students during singing, which they did most days. 3. Subject-specific objectives for content mastery and acquisition of skills. The prioritizing of goals as experience did not preclude setting goals for the mastery of subject-specific content, that is, what non-Waldorf educators would call objectives in the cognitive domain. These learning objectives were always subsumed under experiential goals. The experiential goal of learning to enjoy looking at trees comprised several specific objectives, like the completion of a tree journal with correct spelling and required vocabulary. The goal of experiencing the quality of Roman times comprised a list of specific cognitive objectives that are given in the example below. Setting the stage, how did it all happen? Teachers' lists of subject-specific goals always included starting with or reviewing the basic principles, procedures, assumptions, and scope of the field of study in question. They expected that their students demonstrate understanding of the foundations of a subject, or, if it was a subject they had previously studied, that they demonstrate retention. As seen in many previous examples, teachers often begin a block by engaging students in a physical sensory activity or practical application that would provide experiential grounding in subjects. They followed, and most of them said this in the course of the study, a pedagogical imperative for making the subject important to students and for making its foundations understood. Some examples follow. To set the stage for chemistry, Bill had his 7th graders role play as alchemists, for alchemy was the precursor of chemistry. Laura was concerned that students understand the fundamental differences in life forms in her human and animal block, and guided them through the postures described above. Why do we need standardized measurement? Lynn made sure her 3rd graders pondered this question and came to some conclusions. Clara started off the economics block with a story about 2 islands, each having a resource the other lacked. Laura began 4th grade local geography by describing geographical features that resulted from the ice age in her state: wetlands, peat deposits, rock formations, forests. She then connected them with the culture and myths of pre-contact Native Americans, as well as the lifestyles of the first English settlers. What are some of the ways in which the human being is more than his anatomy? Beverly integrated portraits and a poem to encourage her students to reflect on this question and awaken them to possible answers. Why did human beings begin exploring the heavens? Beverly asked at the beginning of the astronomy block. How did the Earth begin? Clara asked to start off geology. As we will see in Chapter 7, some scholars on the cutting edge of education reform are urging just this approach of starting with the very basics and providing students with the context they need in order to grasp why they should be learning a given subject. For example, Wiggins and McTighe, 2005. What should they know and be able to do? In addition to grounding the subject matter in basic questions as mainsprings for planning instruction, the teachers set a range of specific goals for furthering specific content mastery and acquisition of skills. By the end of their second math block of the year, Carl expected his fifth graders to be able to recognize proper fractions, improper fractions, and mixed numbers, change mixed numbers into improper fractions and vice versa, recognize and understand equivalent fractions, expand and reduce proper fractions, add and subtract fractions with same and different denominators, and show progress in learning to find common denominators. Subsumed under her experiential goal for sixth grade Roman history, experience the development, Clara had specific content objectives: that students demonstrate knowledge of the traditions about the founding of Rome, the Roman character, the main military and political leaders of the Republic, everyday life during the Republic, the Roman army, the Punic Wars and Hannibal, and the later emperors. Beverly's learning goals for her seventh graders in history included factual knowledge about the geography of 15th century Europe and the Middle East, and about the following topics: Genghis Khan and the Mongols, Venice as the center of trade, Marco Polo and Kublai Khan, the plague, Petrarch, Florence and its politics, Dante's biography, Brunelleschi, the Medicis, the map of Renaissance Italy, and Leonardo da Vinci. In seventh grade chemistry, Bill's objectives were that students would be able to use the terms with precision, describe the characteristics of and test for acids and bases, identify the difference between various types of oxidation reactions, know chemical notation, understand and identify the physical properties of matter, be familiar with the names and uses of basic lab equipment, and understand and demonstrate necessary safety precautions for working under laboratory conditions. Clara's expectations for subject matter competence in geology were that students learn 20 geology-rated words a week, be able to identify a majority of rocks on display in the classroom, demonstrate knowledge of facts and definitions regarding continental drift, plate tectonics, earthquakes, volcanoes, noteworthy volcano eruptions, metal ores, igneous rocks, sedimentary rocks, the history and significance of salt for human development, fossil fuels, rivers and erosion, glaciers, the water cycle, the rock cycle, and gems and jewels. Mary specified as learning goals for fifth grade botany that students be able to state the difference between higher and lower life forms, make specific comparisons among earth, human, and plant realms, name the different stages of development of plants and the parts of plants, know the major climate zones, keep a tree journal with date, weather, and observations about a tree of their choice, and master 12 to 15 new spelling and vocabulary words related to botany per week. In her fourth grade mathematics block, Rosa set the following goals. Students would begin working with factors and prime numbers, learn the 7 through 12 times tables, work on addition and multiplication with carrying, subtraction with borrowing, and long division with single divisor, and begin working with fractions. Her stating goals in this way that students would begin to work toward achieving proficiency reflects the fact that she planned another math block later that year and that math skills were practiced as part of a morning preparation throughout the academic year, whatever the main subject of the block. Bill set the following specific goals for the two-week seventh grade grammar block: that students make progress in self-editing skills, manage a 1-to-3 paragraph writing assignment easily within a 2-day cycle, demonstrate understanding of the different uses of writing, reports, biography, creative writing, identify different verse forms and meters, and understand and demonstrate appreciation for metaphor, simile, and other poetic devices. In these examples, We could see that teachers planned their teaching around what are commonly understood as cognitive objectives or specification of what students should know and be able to do. In Waldorf education, the higher the grade, the more prominent are goals and objectives in the cognitive domain. As noted above, Waldorf teachers do not usually use the terms of the three domains, cognitive, affective, and psychomotor. They work with willing, feeling, and thinking as interweaving, interdependent capabilities to be used and enhanced with the progression in importance from willing in the early grades to thinking in the higher grades. The pedagogy that is appropriate for the middle grades, approximately grades 3 through 6, aims to engage students' feelings and imagination and to respond to their awakening concern for right and wrong. Teachers in lower grades do state cognitive objectives, such as mastering lists of spelling words, learning and reciting times tables, completing math problems, memorizing verses, and writing paragraphs from dictation with correct punctuation and spelling. But relatively more classroom time is devoted to the activities in the lower grades with goals that in non-Waldorf terminology would be considered affective and psychomotor. Teachers' expectations for every block always included satisfactory completion of a student-created main lesson book, demonstrating competence in the subject at hand. We discuss these books as an important aspect of assessment in Chapter 5. 4. Reinforcement and progress in math and language arts in all blocks. Regardless of the block topic, teachers' preparations always included the planning of activities to support progress in math at grade level and language skills, including grammar, punctuation, spelling, vocabulary, and composition, also at grade level. In addition, as directed by the Waldorf curriculum, mathematics, or algebra or geometry, depending on the grade, was itself a main lesson subject 2 or 3 times a year in every grade. As is clear from the above discussion of the morning preparatory exercises, or CIRCLE, teachers in all grades used the first hour of the morning to reinforce and expand math and language skills with games and drills. In Clara's CIRCLE, during 6th grade geology, she set up a beanbag tossing game in which she called out a noun related to geology, like erosion, and students had to respond with the corresponding verb as they tossed to the next person. Laura sometimes used flashcard math problems with her 4th graders, having them write answers in notebooks. She had her students play a ball bouncing game, reciting the 12s table during the geography block, since 12 is important for measuring distance. The game became increasingly complex so that by the end of the block, they were reciting a rhythmic verse while bouncing the ball from right hand to left hand around their backs. Lynn's 3rd graders practiced times tables while walking back and forth on a balance beam, singly or in pairs. Some teachers had children practice spelling words for the block with clapping games. In the higher grades, students often did written work during CIRCLE as well as movement and recitation. Clara's 6th grade class had practice books that they worked in every day for taking notes and examples as she gave them new grammar rules. Bill's 7th graders used special math notebooks, if needed, when he gave them mental math problems, which were part of a daily morning preparation. Planning for main lesson instruction always provided for practice and gains in proficiency in language and arts skills. During main lesson proper, all the teachers told us that they gave dictations covering material already presented and recalled. These dictations were aimed at helping students make progress in writing skills, grammar and spelling, as well as reinforcing block content. Dictations in the lower grades were typically 6 to 8 simple sentences recapitulating material already told and recalled in discussion. Teachers spoke the sentences, choosing vocabulary and grammar features that they wanted students to learn. For example, Rose's students worked on tenses, parts of speech, and spelling phonograms while writing dictations on stories from Norse mythology, the focus of 4th grade history. Claudia conducted a dictation that we observed by writing, as she spoke, on a large sheet affixed to the blackboard with magnets. She asked her 3rd graders to spell many words and sent them to the dictionary if no one knew. She also talked about punctuations. The aim was pinpoint accuracy, and every comma, apostrophe, period, and capital letter was noted and explained. Teachers of the higher grades gave lengthier and more complex dictations and asked students to formulate the text, giving only the outline of ideas. Along with content-related and language arts goals, Teachers mentioned that dictations had, as goals, the strengthening of step-by-step thinking, attention to detail, and listening skills. In our experience, the giving of teacher-dictated content for writing assignments, as is usual in the lower grades, has provoked questions from observers unfamiliar with Waldorf pedagogy. The students all do the same work. What about individual creativity? Waldorf educators refer to the characteristics and needs of young children as understood in the theory of child development that underlines the pedagogy. Children in the early grades, 1 through 3 or 4, have not yet found their individual voices or gifts. To ask them to be creative, for example, write whatever you want about the story of Solomon, would be unfair and would not provide much information about their still developing abilities. With the Waldorf method, they are given the opportunity to work toward a goal that they can all succeed in meeting. This builds confidence and purposefulness, as well as stronger academic skills that they will draw on later. From the Waldorf perspective, to tell a 9-year-old child to write or draw whatever he feels like is fine in non-pedagogical situations. However, if the aim is pedagogical, what is most effective is to model those skills that he will only acquire later and to provide lots of practice with those models, with guidance. This approach will give him a firm foundation for later individual creative expression. Waldorf educators would also say that clear directions about what to write or what to draw protect young children from feelings of inadequacy, insecurity, fear of failure, anxiety, feelings that can undermine self-confidence and trust in their own creativity later on. In the free, not dictated, compositions the teachers in the higher, 5th, 6th, and 7th, grades assigned, whatever the main lesson subject, teachers had clear expectations for continuing expansion of proficiency in grammar, spelling, and vocabulary, as well as factual knowledge and understanding of the material at hand. To support writing skills in botany, a science block, Mary had students choose a tree, record observations at different times of day, including their feelings, sit under it, and write a composition. She had them learn new vocabulary related to the subject: beneficial, specific, deciduous, frond, petrified, and residue. In the math block, she had them write a fraction manual, a prose explanation of rules for working with fractions, and also a short composition about the words related to similar Latin roots. In chemistry, Bill expected his 7th graders to practice and become proficient in technical writing and experiment write-ups. All the teachers had students learn and recite poems related to the subject, with expectations for continuing development of speech abilities and a deeper experience of language, syntax, vocabulary, possibilities for meaning and rhythm. In these ways, they combined goals for progress and attainment in language arts with other academic subject goals. 5. Goals for development of dispositions and capabilities in all domains, including social goals. Next to experience, teachers most often expressed goals for lower grades in terms of development of feelings, like confidence and enthusiasm, and increasingly, as the grades progressed, in terms of what are called core capacities, capabilities that are important in all subjects, such as different kinds of reasoning, judgment, observational acuity, independent and critical thinking, logical thinking, and memory. They also planned lessons in all grades that, when possible, would support development of empathy, values and principles, creativity, and aesthetic and moral sensibilities. The importance that Waldorf educators give creativity needs no justification. Creativity, according to one non-Waldorf scholar, Starko, 2010, has an essential role in bringing joy and meaning to the human condition. Without creativity, we have no art, no literature, no science, no innovation, no problem solving, no progress. Students who use content in creative ways learn content well. They also learn strategies for identifying problems, making decisions, and finding solutions both in and out of school. Page 9. She states that we know how to recognize it, and we know what other characteristics are usually associated with it. For example, high energy, curiosity, cognitive flexibility, high valuation of aesthetic values, and the courage to take risks. Starko, 2010, page 86. She cites a study showing that creativity is preceded by and depends on feelings, especially sympathy toward the area in question, page 121. Assessment of creativity, however, is problematic, pages 283 to 311. Teachers often mention the goal of good study habits, following directions, completing assignments, including timely completion of homework in every grade. All the teachers insisted on completion of every assignment. If necessary, they made allowances for individual circumstances and ensured extra help for those needing it. They stated, as learning goals in higher grades, that students speak clearly, improve penmanship, become competent in using the dictionary, be capable of making outlines, become increasingly proficient in doing independent research, and learn how to take good notes and study for tests. Both the seventh grade teachers assigned research projects, expecting acquisition or further development of a range of cognitive abilities such as synthetic reasoning, locating information, and evaluating its relevance to the task at hand. In her instructions for the astronomy group projects, Beverly specified her expectations for learning to do research, that students show that they can plan and carry out research, write a report on a topic chosen from a list she provided, submit a draft, and prepare a presentation to the class with handouts and visual aids. She supported their efforts by giving them a list of questions to use in organizing their presentations. For example, should we make a chalk drawing to illustrate our topic? Should we prepare handouts? What are the most important facts to convey about our topic? Do we have enough information to fill 20 minutes? She had a list of content-related objectives for this block as well. Here, we are noting only the emphasis on the development of research skills as a goal. We documented numerous instances of teachers designing a presentation purposely in order to stimulate independent thinking and independent discovery, especially of drawing conclusions on their own. See Vignette 3. Vignette 3. Clara's Business Math and Economics Block. In preparing to teach business math and economics, a 3-week block, Clara stated her goals as benchmarks: that they gain more proficiency with word problems, greater ability to convert and work with percent, fractions, and decimals, and be able to articulate the differences between barter and money-based systems of exchange. She also expected them to acquire proficiency using a business vocabulary, further specified at 20 new words per week, and knowledge of how a bank works. To build understanding at the most basic level, she had them discuss the question, how did people provide for their needs before modern civilization? They came themselves to the idea of self-sufficiency, although she had to provide that term. Then she asked, what was good about self-sufficiency? What were its disadvantages? What changed that caused people to stop being self-sufficient? They copied several essays that she dictated. She had them write their own story about two islands that each had a product needed by the other, setting them up to discover, on their own, the idea of bartering. She asked them to think through what could happen to make the system more efficient. Again, she provided the term middleman, but only after they had come up with the idea themselves. As the block progressed, she initiated discussions through challenging questions of money, banking, and other topics. They brainstormed together the steps needed to begin a business, designed a business logo, and set up a time bank of services for barter within the school community. Instruction in this block was a composite of presentation, discussion, written assignments, math review, thinking assignments, and practical projects. They wrote and edited compositions and worked on complex page borders with interwoven colors, partly following her indications and partly creating their own designs. In daily circle, they practiced math skills with games, rubber balls, rhythmic oral recitation of times tables, and written math problems. They had to write out pages for the math main lesson books with definitions of mathematical terms, with paragraphs about their uses. She gave several short quizzes on percent conversions and several spelling tests. Bill was emphatic in his journal, during the chemistry block, that he wanted students to draw their own conclusions from evidence or, as he put it, he arranged the lessons to get them to add thought to perception. He reported that often, and not only in science blocks, he aimed to stimulate their thinking by ending the day's lesson with a question they had to think about overnight. This strategy, having students draw their own conclusions rather than reading them in a test book, is fundamental to the Waldorf method of teaching science. As part of their teacher education, Waldorf teachers are taught how to set up projects so that students can discover themselves the key concepts or relationships, or to figure out on their own what it is they don't yet know that they need to know in order to proceed. Problem-based learning that supports the development of students' ability to draw conclusions on their own helps encourage creativity in general. Starko, 2010, pages 214 to 242. The Waldorf approach serves to support the development of certain habits of mind, including what Wiggins and McTighe call the disposition to understand, 2005, pages 171 to 175. Similarly, some teachers' journals reflected a concern that students develop a disposition of broad-mindedness and appreciation toward the wholeness and interrelatedness of all facets of life and learning. This was evident, for example, in Clara's stated goal in geology that students come to understand the importance of wonder and imagination in the earth sciences. And in Bill's journal entry, one of my many goals for the history curriculum is for the students to understand that the modern world of instant everything is based on the slow and quite amazing accomplishments of people willing to risk their all in difficult and dangerous circumstances, not just for gain, but for many other less tangible rewards. In general, the focus on the development of attitudes, faculties, sensitivities, character traits, dispositions, and capabilities reflected the Waldorf teacher's concern for the feeling life of students, the affective domain. As said earlier, the teachers treated this development as a goal in itself in all grades and apart from any academic attainment made possible by this development. Many of the personality traits that Starko, 2010, says are linked with creative thought and action appear frequently in Waldorf School's descriptions of the purpose of education. Curiosity, broad interests, open or tolerance for diverse viewpoints, intuition and emotional depth, willingness to take risks, page 94. She discusses evidence for the assertion that feeling precedes creative thinking and proposes teaching tools that can support the connecting of students' feelings with content, observing with the senses, recalling past and imagining new sensory experience, body awareness, empathizing, playing, modeling, and seven others, 2010, page 122. Recent discussions of the importance of emotional intelligence also support the Waldorf view that encouraging the healthy development of students' feeling life is not merely helpful, but in fact critical for good educational outcomes, including those in the cognitive domain, knowing and intellectual understanding. For example, Barron, 2007, Goleman, 1995, Kahn, 2013, Solovian Mayer, 1989. In almost every description of their preparation for teaching a block, the teachers also specified further development of social skills. Teachers of the earlier grades always stated social goals when they planned the morning preparation activities, along with such goals as increasing alertness and reinforcing basic skills. But all the teachers kept the Waldorf social curriculum in mind, planning instruction to enable students to develop healthy relationships with each other. Clara used mirroring activities in her sixth grader's repertoire of exercises in one block. Students worked in pairs, with one active in making a gesture, which was to be imitated by the other. This was part of the social curriculum, she said, and the goal is that children support each other and are open to each other's individuality. Like several of the other teachers, Clara often phrased her learning goals as group goals. We'll hear about, we'll be learning, we'll follow. With this phrasing, she was expressing the concern to strengthen class solidarity and common efforts in meeting new learning challenges. The goals for the many group assignments that were reported always included the development of cooperation, open-mindedness, civility, and a consideration for others. Lynn's goals for the third grade play included cooperation toward a common goal of the performance and appreciation for others' abilities. The group projects that we documented served as occasions for student peer and self-assessment. We discuss them as such in Chapter 5. The goal of artistic immersion. The teachers included drawing, painting, and sometimes sculpting and planning instruction in all grades in all main lesson blocks. These assignments and activities were not separate or extra, but rather were integral to the presentation of the content. Waldorf pedagogy prescribes that teachers include artistic work in main lesson activities in all grades. It is assumed that artistic engagement gives students a direct, personal, and enduring experience of a subject. Waldorf teachers recognize and take full advantage of what they see as enormous positive impact of artistic activity on learning and motivation. Working on drawings or paintings that are directly related to the lesson content, students may enhance their perceptions of the subject, better synthesize and assimilate the material, and come to a deeper understanding of it. Such activity supports the development of attention to detail, precision and accuracy, and trains powers of observation and reflection generally. Apart from its benefits for academic learning, doing art is essential for the development of aesthetic sensibilities. For younger children especially, making beautiful pictures under the guidance of the teacher can encourage the development of a sense for beauty and access to their imagination and intuitive inner world. This, in turn, helps lead to a clearer and more positive sense of self and knowledge of one's own capabilities. In the teaching that we documented, teachers expected completion of a specific number of art assignments in every block. Most of these were incorporated as illustrations into students' main lesson books, which also contained their written work for the block: dictations, compositions, math problems, and science write-ups. In lower grades, the teachers provided an example for children to copy, either a colored chalk blackboard drawing or by modeling the picture step by step on a large sheet in front of the class. In most blocks, they made borders for pages using a design element or symbols related to the course content. For example, braided forms for Norse mythology, 4th grade, or Greek key patterns for Greek history, 5th grade. They also made illustrated cover pages for each book. The way that art was integrated into the lesson varied with the grade, following the principle of age appropriateness. The rationale was similar to that for written dictations. The younger the child, the more important it would be to provide guidance and models, and to avoid asking prematurely for individual creativity. Thus, the third grade teachers had students copy pictures they had prepared that illustrated stories previously told, and guided the children through the steps needed to complete theirs. In this way, all the children would experience success. Teachers of 6th and 7th grades, on the other hand, provided students with suggestions, topical guidelines, and several models, and encouraged individual experiment and effort, which were understood as appropriate and important for older children to undertake. The theme-related artistic activities recorded in our teachers' journals ranged from the use by Rose's 4th graders of color coding for different parts of speech and for distinguishing verbs of different tenses, to individually created drawings on a theme in the upper grades, as when Beverly's students drew portraits during physiology, aimed at helping them better understand human proportions. Clara's 6th graders drew colored diagrams of the Earth's interior and the insides of volcanoes in geology. During math and measurement, Lynn had her 3rd graders work on borders for main lesson book pages that were precisely measured, giving them practice with a ruler. Like all Waldorf teachers, Claudia used form drawing to support the learning of cursive. In every science block, whatever the grade, students made detailed, colored pencil drawings with labels of rocks, mountains, algae, mushrooms, flowers, plants, body systems, animals, ecosystems, and life cycles, and, in Bill's chemistry block, items of lab equipment. In every block dealing with history, geography, or culture, students made handmade colored maps of the relevant area. To summarize the Waldorf approach to setting learning goals, the teachers planned instruction around goals for lively experiences of the subject at hand, as well as benchmarks for progress in mathematics and language arts. They planned a diverse set of activities and assignments aimed at engaging students in different ways, cognitively, socially, physically, aesthetically, effectively, in the material of the subject. These invariably included a practical application, listening to presentations of new material as stories or narratives, written work, artwork, sketching, painting, colored pencil illustrating of content, memorization and recitation, work in groups or pairs, and in many cases, field trips or visits by outside experts in the field. As a final example, here is Rose's list of goals for her fourth grade geography block, illustrating all the common themes with her plans for the activities that would help students achieve those goals in parentheses. That students improve in individual spatial orientation and physical coordination, games and dance. Learn new drawing techniques, precision drawing with rulers. Know the four directions, demonstrate by turning on cue. Know how to make and read simple maps, map making. Write without lines in their books, writing and rewriting. Be able to form sentences and paragraphs with proper punctuation, writing and rewriting. Continue to master recitation of the times tables in preparation for the upcoming math block, group and individual recitation. Continue to develop musical ability, especially finger dexterity, recorder playing, singing. Enhance math skills. Memorize and recite alliterations and poetry to develop speech capacities, recitation. Strengthen social cohesion and sense of well-being, singing, dancing, and games. This instructional planning was aimed at enabling students to acquire subject-related knowledge and skills, experience multisensory engagement in the subject, make progress in math and language arts, and strengthen their abilities in social and physical motor areas of development.